The BBC presents My Music, a radio panel game devised by Edward J. Mason and Tony Schreier. And here's Steve Race to introduce the teams.
Hello. Another My Music begins here with our usual contestants. Let me give you their names, after which there will be a burst of spontaneous applause. Ian Wallace and Dennis Norden, John Amis and Frank Muir. All present and correct. So let's begin with some good, bold, bright, breezy orchestral music. Ian Wallace, you first. Rather a good opening. The opening, Ian, to what?
Rather funny you should have chosen that one, because not very long ago I was comparing a concert in the festival hall at which that piece was played, and after it I said to the audience, I paid great attention to that overture we've just heard, ladies and gentlemen, because it is the sort of thing that Steve Race is likely to ask me in my music.
I didn't know, honestly, I didn't know that.
I said, what is more, one feels such an absolute idiot if you then say it's the overture to William Tell.
Yes, you would.
It is, in fact, the overture Light Cavalry.
Yes.
And do you want the composer?
Well, yes, just for a bonus, as it were.
Well, just for a bonus, I'm not absolutely sure that I remember. Is it Offenbach?
No, he's got an E acute on the end of his name.
Oh, Supé.
Supé, yes. You have your mark for the Light Cavalry Overture. Yes. Well, we'll see how Dennis gets on. Dennis, what's this called?
About halfway down the same piece, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. Yes, it is indeed. I thought I'd just try you out on that.
Yeah, it's a rotten trick.
Yes, so
You wouldn't fool him, because Jimmy Edwards
is his
standard piece. On his
euphonium.
No, trumpet.
Trumpet, well. Oh, well,
we also knew Von Supé, because you have to fill it in on Performing Rights Society Returns, you see.
That's right, yes. Mm-hmm. It's very good in crosswords, too. 3-5, Von Supé.
Oh, yes.
A mark to Dennis, and John Amis, your turn. John, I played rather a lot of that for the very good reason that I like listening to it. What is it?
It's from an opera which has a rather nice scene in which the devil is seen sitting on a coal fire. It's called Schwander the Bagpiper, or yes. Schwander Dudak.
Yes.
Or Schwander der Dudelsack Pfeife. I remember I had a record of this as a child, and one day we had a lady came to see us, and she said, oh, you've got a new record, how delightful. And I played it, and she talked all the way through, and she said, oh, that was nice. And I said, oh, yes, you must listen to it sometime.
Shortly after that, your parents ran away from home.
I was sent out of the room, I think. Great relief.
The polka from Schwander the Bagpiper by Weinberger gets John his mark. And Frank, this is a dance from Orpheus in the Underworld. can-can. I'm interested to know why it came to be called the can-can.
It gave the customers a cheap thrill.
It was Lord. I knew that one of the principal dancers was the great-grandmother of the boy detective Tintin.
Well, I think I'll do very nicely for your mark.
I can't tell you why.
Well, hardly anybody can. Cancan, in French, I suppose they pronounce it like that, means really tittle-tattle or scandal and so on. Some clever people can identify songs simply by hearing their accompaniments, and some especially clever people can identify accompaniments from their endings. That's what we have now. Ian Wallace, what piano accompaniment ends like this?
Oh, that's one of the most lovely songs in the English language. Vaughan Williams' The Roadside Fire.
Yes, and the English language bit came from Robert Louis Stevenson.
Good.
And while your accompanist is playing that, you are composing your features, aren't you? As to prevent the audience applauding until he's finished. It's a great art with singers.
One looks modest.
That's right.
One keeps one's hands in the position they were in when you sang the last bit, and then if it's not a very good audience up to that point, you will probably drop them rather sharply and put your head down as if to indicate that's the end.
That's right.
Otherwise, you'll just smile winningly at them.
Right.
A rather nice story about an Italian tenor who was singing Schumann's Dichterlieder, which has got a beautiful postlude at the end, which takes about a minute and a half, and it's bored the Italian tenor, so he just went off.
Dennis, this is just the left-hand part of the ending of a piano solo.
Sounds like it's a boogie piano or something.
Yes, that's right. Long title.
John knows it.
Does he?
He put his hand up, yeah. Oh, it's Honky Tonk. Is it Honky Tonk Train Blues?
Why not? Give you a little help. Honky Tonk Train Blues it is. Yeah. Yes.
I must tell you, Steve, we had a previous question on Honky Tonk Train Blues, and I said I had a dim memory of having it on a 12-inch 78, and you said that you...
I didn't think so.
I had a letter from a listener to say that he's got that 12-inch 78. Would I like him to send it to me so that I could convince you? And I said, no, I think my word alone would do.
Unsupported word, yes. Yeah. Mead Lux Lewis's Honky Tonk Train Blues. Well, now, I helped Dennis a bit with that, so I'm prepared to help you, John, if you need it. This, John, is from a song. It's the very end. If you want any more, John, you can play it yourself.
Yes.
You got it.
It's Oliver Cromwell.
That's right, arranged by...
Benjamin Britten.
Benjamin Britten, yes. Very good. And this last line from the singer is, if you want any more, you can sing it yourself. Like that. Good for you, Mark. Frank,
We can play the piano.
Frank, what ends like this?
Why have you put 48 there? We haven't got that many marks.
Somebody knows. John, you've written 48 for him, have you? Yes. Well, John, you answer for your side.
Well, can we have the credit note passed on to me? you said you'd help him.
Well,
and
yes.
He didn't need it. So.
Well, this one, it begins like this. Yes. And when John...
You know, it's just as well he doesn't know the other 47. it's the first of the Prelude and Fugues and the well-tempered clavier 48 Preludes and Fugues by Bach.
Yes, that's right. And it became the Bach Uno Ave Maria. Right, let's have a look at the score so far. Leading by one mark, Ian Wallace and Dennis Norden. When we were young, people of our generation, we wanted to be engine drivers. Later on, it became jet pilots. Fathers who, when they were young, wanted to be famous footballers now find that their sons want to be famous football club managers, which is more money and less effort. But a recent poll suggested that a high percentage of youngsters these days would like more than anything else to be managers of pop groups. To manage The Who, The Witch, Uriah Heep, T-Rex, or my favourite pop group name, The Measles. Well, assuming you too would like to manage a successful pop group, two marks to you if you can come up with a good name for your group. Ian, what would you call a pop group if you had to name one?
Well, I think if it was a pop group that I was going to take part in myself as well as manage it, I think the only possible title I could have would be Old Wallow and the Stick in the Muds.
That would be your style. Pretty fair, I think, yes. Dennis, have you got a name for your pop group?
I hadn't thought about taking part in it myself, actually. But if it was thick enough to... if the group was thick enough to entrust their musical management to me... and let me sing in it as well. I think the only name could be Rock Bottom.
I'm surprised nobody's used that, and maybe somebody has.
You may be
offered the 12-inch record, I think.
It's a musical version of Midsummer Night's Dream, actually.
John, a pop group name.
I think it'd be rather nice to have one of those groups that does old music and sends it up, and then you could call it Baroque Bottom.
Frank, pop group.
You've shot your bolt with that.
Oh, one. Yes.
Yes,
oh,
yes.
Why not?
Yes.
Surely it's The Whom. And I think that... in keeping with the world monetary crisis, that one should scale down some of these names to something more appropriate to a time of domestic economy. T-Rex should be our prince. Blue mink should be simulated rabbit. And the cream, condensed milk.
Lovely, yes. I have to tell you that following my request for song titles some while ago featuring cheese, do you remember this, cheeses, the cheese board, a listener in Abingdon in Oxfordshire, Harry Wheaton, wrote and said, well, he said he remembered a Panto song from before the First World War, which ended, I'm a lonely gorgonzola sitting on the garden wall. I seem to be the only cheese that nobody loves at all. Would have brought back memories.
Yeah.
Let's move on and pay tribute to a fine singing voice. Just whose fine singing voice, I'm sure Ian will be able to tell us after this passage from I Pagliacci. Ian, who is she?
Could be none other, I think, than Joan Sutherland.
That's right. I'm sorry you got it. I was so looking forward to giving you a hint that the orchestra was conducted by Richard Bonning.
Yes, that would have been a very good hint.
A heavy hint, yes. Joan Sutherland's lovely voice it was for a mark. Dennis, listen to this bit from a Verdi opera and then see if you can give us the roughest idea of the plot. I can tell you it's something to do with a prison.
I've got to construct a whole opera.
An entire scenario.
Well, you
just
see...
just a scene, a moment.
Well,
there was this prison.
That's true.
In the Rhine Valley, it's a very poor village which lives on the proceeds of the prison. They're all sort of warders, and they supply food to it. And all the young people get together to raise money to get the prison turned into an autobahn. And they sent for an opera company from Berlin to do Wagner's Ring there. But at the last moment, the villainous chief warder, who is played by Joan Sutherland in a in a rare change of pace for her, refuses to let them have his Schloss to do the opera in. So the opera company go back to Berlin. And one of the young principal tenors sings an aria called "Hey Kids, Why Don't We Put the Show on Ourselves?" And it's a great success. And that aria was where his sweetheart sits on a rock and combs her long blonde hair, and she sings a song called "Singing in the Rhine."
Well, you very nearly got it right.
Yeah.
It comes from Verdi's Luisa Miller. Luisa loves Rodolfo, who is in prison, but their love is doomed and they take poison. I, myself, prefer your version to Verdi's, but you get a mark just the same. John, a listener in Alnwick, Northumberland, wonders why we don't hear this aria as often as we used to do. Can you identify it, please, from a brief, rather impassioned bit out of the middle?
Tis a savage winning there, or some wretched watery villa. No, it is no bird. Oh no, joy, it is a boat, a sail, and yonder rides our gallant foe.
Isn't she apostrophizing the ocean?
Yes, that's right, she is. She's saying, ocean,
calling it a mighty monster.
Ocean, thou mighty monster. That's right. From?
Oberon, isn't it?
Yes, from Oberon by
Weber,
that's right. Ocean, thou mighty monster. It's a marvellous, dramatic, melodramatic piece. My husband, we are saved. A sail is on the horizon, and so on. Perhaps that's why we don't hear it so much these days. It's melodramatic. I don't know.
It's difficult, I suppose.
Oh, yes.
Good number for Desert Island Discs.
Yes. May I tell a rather nice story about Joan Sutherland? She was doing The Messiah, and Sir Adrian Bolt was conducting, and Richard Bonning had written her a lot of marvellous cadenzas. And Sir Adrian hadn't been apprised of this before it happened. And so she let off a terrific cadenza lasting about 4 minutes. And at the end of it, he said, "Miss Sutherland, what is this, mad scenes from The Messiah?"
Frank, your turn, and another operatic excerpt. Rather as in Dennis's case, can you construct the story, please, around this? I can tell you it takes place in the country.
Voici le jour, et je ne suis plus seule enfin. Ma fidèle amie est de retour. Bonjour! Et danser demain à ma noce avec Owen, n'est-ce pas?
N'est-ce pas? I know you couldn't hear all the words, Frank, but can you give us an idea of the story?
Well, there's this opera, there's this countryside, and there's this crowd have come down from Paris, and there's the heroine, who's a midinette. That means she's gets up in middle of the night, and she sews hats for a living. And she acts as maid in the country for the Contessa there. But while they are having a picnic one day, the Medinette's auntie comes, who's married to a diplomat, who appears in the third act.
You're and warming
the
to
auntie
task, aren't
has a maid, who is really a chap in disguise. And one day, the man who's married to the Contessa, the Count,
who's in love with his wife's maid, says to the other maid, will you take a message to the maid of the aunt of the millionaire? And she unhappily gives the message to the wrong maid. Not to the other maid, but to the other maid. Who passes it by mistake through a letterbox to the house of the aunt's maid's other maid's friend. And she was bewailing the fact in the song. The title of the opera is Le Conte Conte.
It's, well, a mark to you, of course, but it's the shadow song from Dinora, from Meyerbeer's opera about a peasant girl, a goat herd, and some hidden treasure. Mark to you.
What I said.
Fantastic opera plot, lovely. The final round now, and four songs of travel. Not that Vaughan Williams ever arranged any of these songs. Least of all, I think the one that Dennis Norden will now sing. Dennis, how do you propose to keep the ex-service veterans contented with the agricultural life to which they must perforce return now that they've been exposed to the flesh pots of the French capital? And shall I give you an introduction?
Ready?
I'd rather... How you gonna keep them down on the farm? I wish you wouldn't interfere, Steve. He's not content with playing all those piano bits on the question. Has to mess people up. Now that they've seen Paris, how you gonna keep them away from Broadway, jazzing around, painting the town? How you gonna keep them away from harm? It's a mystery. They'll never want to use a rake or plow. And who the hell can parlez-vous a cow? How ugly.
Never before have I got a complete chorus out of you, Dennis. That was marvellous.
Well, we were living in two different worlds.
Two marks to you. John, more travel. Jeanette MacDonald sang in a film about the climate to be expected on the other side of the horizon. And because you date from those days somewhat, I thought you might be able to manage it. In her key was B-flat, which is a nice key for a tenor. May I try you?
Beyond the blue horizon dawns a beautiful day. Gonna think that for me joy is all before me. Beyond the blue horizon my life has only begun. Beyond the blue horizon there's a rising sun.
Sister is in her room, should you require her services after that top B flat. Frank, John's was a blue horizon, yours is a blue heaven. Shall we try you in key of F and see what happens?
When whippoorwills call and evening is nigh, I'll be happy in my heaven. A turn to the right, a little white light will lead me to my blue heaven. You'll see a smiling face, a fireplace, a cozy room, a little nest where birdies rest and roses bloom. Just Polly and me, and the children make four. We'll be happy in your blue heaven.
We're getting whole choruses today. Ian, sea travel for you. Travel over the deep in which many brave hearts are asleep. Will you toll the bell?
My goodness, I hope you didn't think I'd date from that bit.
Loudly the bell in the old tower rings, bidding us list to the war.
Beware our next week programme, if you wish. You're too late to beware this one, which ends with a victory, still by one mark, for Ian Wallace and Dennis Norton. Goodbye.
Taking part in My Music were John Amis, Frank Muir, Dennis Norden, and Ian Wallace. The questions were compiled by our chairman, Steve Race, and the programme was produced for the BBC by Tony Schreier.